Watch on KBOO Portland via 90.7 on our great big red and white Eiffel Tower on the West Hills and other frequencies elsewhere in Cascadia and via KBOO.fm going out to you and to all the ships at sea.
It's 9:29 a.m. You're listening to KBOO Portland. Next up, stay tuned for Fight the Empire. Fight the Empire, when host Pete Perfigering looks at how the imperialism permeates our lives.
Tune into KBOO Wednesday, July 24th from 8 a.m. to 6 p.m. for the 21st Annual Homelessness Marathon. Broadcasting from a different city each year and airing on non-commercial radio stations coast to coast, this annual marathon features live reports, interviews with advocates and experts, and calls from listeners all over the country. This year's programming includes the voices of youth, students, and LGBTQ people, panels on fighting evictions, transitioning people back into housing, and ending homelessness now. That's the Homelessness Marathon, Wednesday, July 24th, from 8 a.m. to 6 p.m., here on your community radio station, KBOO Portland.
Well, good morning. This is Per Fogring, and the show is Fight the Empire. And I think today we're going to talk about British Labour Party leader Jeremy Corbyn and the big battle he's been fighting. He was elected leader of the Labour Party, I think, about 4 years ago, and he's been the target of all kinds of attacks from all over the place in England and everywhere else, accusing him of being anti-Semitic, and it basically comes down to his support for Palestine. An interesting article, as a British journalist, Jonathan Cook, who actually has lived in, he lives in Nazareth, which is in Israel, but it's a predominantly Palestinian city. And he writes about events in Israel and in England, too. And he says that actually Corbyn was kind of elected. He called it, was kind of a mistake on the part of the establishment. And he said that the Labour MPs put his name on the ballot to make the election look fair and open. They didn't think he'd win, but at the same time, party ruled at that time gave more weight to members over elected officials, and by golly, they voted Corbyn into power, and this is sort of as Jonathan Cook says, it was an accident. But the system was still in place. In other words, these Labour MPs were still in their offices, and so the system fought back ever since. And what they saw as Corbyn's Achilles heel was his support for Palestinians. And the party then adopted a new definition of anti-Semitism that sort of conflates anti-Zionism with hatred of Jews as a people. And to go on with that, that they also, these party leaders, were blaming their own party for what they call institutional anti-Semitism. And according to Jonathan Cook, they denial of this was almost considered proof of guilt. And he brings up, he points out the case of one writer for the UK Guardian, which has been anti-Corbyn for a long time. You know, the UK Guardian has this reputation of being kind of a lefty newspaper, and I think a lot of that is undeserved. But one of their writers is Jonathan Friedland, and he claims that that Israel is part of Jewish identity, which may be news to a lot of Jewish people I know, including people who I've interviewed on my show in the past, most notably Lenny Brenner. But according to Jonathan Friedland, Israel is now part of Jewish identity. So if you criticize Israel, you are putting down Jews as a people. And also talks about critics as being the wrong kind of Jews, unquote. Well, in a way, these critics are smoothing way for Boris Johnson to become the next prime minister. England's political state of affairs is pretty, it's in a state of turmoil right now with this whole Brexit furor. And Boris Johnson looks like he's in line to become the next prime minister because Theresa May is going to leave in about a week, I believe. Boris Johnson, in case you don't know, is a I would call him, he's like Britain's version of Donald Trump. And in another case, a military person, unnamed, was threatening some kind of, quote, direct action if against Corbyn. So you have this system where the conservatives are in disarray, and Corbyn could very well become the next prime minister. And the the main opponents of Corbyn in the Labour Party are the Blairites, the people, followers of Tony Blair. Now, Tony Blair came to power about, back in the 1990s or so. He followed Margaret Thatcher. In a way, Margaret Thatcher paved the way for Blair. When she became prime minister, she really upended Britain's welfare system, and it was basically she went to war against the workers. She picked a fight with the coal miners' union, and she dismantled the welfare state and a whole lot of other things, the health system, healthcare, and she was aided in this by. It was luckily for her, she took power just around the same time that Britain's North Sea oil came into the market. So she sort of inaugurated a pretty prosperous time for the UK. And that oil is gone now, but Margaret Thatcher enjoyed the benefits of it, and she had a lot of support, and she wielded her power really kind of ruthlessly. And the Blairites, their strategy was sort of that they would go along with this. They would sort of be the more lefty version of Thatcherism. And eventually Tony Blair did take office, and he was very happy to go along with George Bush lying his country along with the U.S. into the war against Iraq. So in a way, Margaret Thatcher did her bit to shift labor to the right and gave us Tony Blair. And so these are the people who are still largely in power in the institutional Labor Party, and they are up in arms that a leftist person like Jeremy Corbyn is now running the Labor Party. And since he's been elected, the Labor Party has greatly expanded its membership. In other words, Corbyn is not very popular with the institutional labor politicians, but he is pretty popular with labor supporters among the population. So the battle has been going on now for several years. We had British civil servants, unnamed, telling the Times of London that Corbyn is, quote, too frail to be prime minister, and that he lacks a firm grasp of foreign policy. Well, this is kind of unheard of, where the civil service is supposed to be nonpartisan, it's supposed to be above and beyond party politics, and here they are putting their two cents in against Corbyn anonymously. The BBC has joined this battle. They put out a show recently called Panorama, and criticizing Corbyn, and which, according to some people, it fell flat. German Parliament. So you have this this whole question of Israel being sort of the keystone, the keynote of anti-Semitism. You find that echoed in the German parliament. They passed a resolution against the boycott and divestment movement, and they made two very questionable statements as part of this resolution. One is that the boycott and divestment campaign, the German parliament equated it with the old Nazi slogan from the 30s of don't buy from Jews. Well, this is not the same as don't buy from Israel. In fact, people can be very happy to buy from Jewish stores and businessmen, but they draw the line at buying from either from Israel itself or from Israeli settlers on Palestinian territory. Those are two different things, but to conflate them is really not quite honest. The other thing the German parliament mentioned was Israel's right to exist. Now, we hear that a lot, as though every nation has a right to exist. Well, nobody asked right to exist as what? Can Israel exist as a one party, a single nation that includes Palestinians? Can Israel exist as along with Palestine that also has a right to exist? So this is a big question that's kind of not talked about in this slogan, right to exist, as though every nation. We don't talk about China's right to exist, for example. China does exist, and it exists with a certain form of government, the one they have right now. When the U.S. finally recognized China, it was not giving its stamp of approval to the communist government of China. It was merely recognizing that China exists as a nation. And so that is sort of the common way of doing business in foreign affairs, where you recognize a country not because you approve of it or like its government, but because it is the government that is in charge of this nation. And so it's the same thing with Israel. Israel does exist, Israel doesn't have a right to exist any more or any less than any other nation in the world. So if people want to call in and comment on this, the number to call is 503-231-8187. Do you think that what does Israel's right to exist mean to you? Do you think that the boycott and divestment program is anti-Semitic? Do you think it is anti-Semitic? Is it anti-Jewish to be anti-Zionist? Several years ago, I had one of my guests was a historian named Lenny Brenner, who wrote a book, Zionism in the Age of the Dictators. And he was very much anti-Zionist. Didn't make him any less Jewish. And he pointed out that that actually Zionism was not very popular with Jews until fairly recently. Back in the 20s, what was more popular among Jews, especially politically minded Jews, was the Jewish Bund, which is kind of a labor group, and also Jewish socialists or socialists of any kind. And it was after the Holocaust that the Zionist movement really became very strong, for obvious reasons. The Holocaust was a decisive, really a horrible moment in human history, and it made everybody, it affected a lot of people, not just Jews, but just ordinary people, witnessing the horrors of the Holocaust, and it made the argument of the Zionists that somehow the Jews would needed a nation of their own, some kind of a fortress to protect themselves against future Holocausts. I don't buy that argument, but a lot of people did back in the late 40s and 50s. So this is part of some of the other things that Corbyn, as evidence of anti-Semitism, and some of them really kind of strange. We did have this new definition from the Holocaust Remembrance Association equating or conflating anti-Zionism with anti-Semitism. And we also had Corbyn was attacked for his half-hearted defense of a mural in London. There was this mural that was put up in London's East End, and it depicted a group of plutocrats playing. They were playing a board game, kind of like a Monopoly game, and the board was resting on the backs of some workers. And so these six plutocrats were playing their game on this board, and two of them were Jewish, but the plutocrats that were depicted in this mural were the original Rothschild, and a banker, James Warburg, also J.P. Morgan, Andrew Carnegie, John D. Rockefeller, and for some reason the Aleister Crowley, who is, I don't know how to describe Crowley, was kind of a weird guy, but anyway, he was lumped in with these six. So out of these six plutocrats, only two were Jewish, and one of the criticisms was that the painter had depicted them with large noses and stuff. Well, all of these six were depicted as being pretty ugly looking, and I've seen pictures. The mural has since been painted over, and I've seen pictures of it, and to me, I don't see I don't see that it was anti-Semitic. It was a painting of six very ugly plutocrats, two of whom happened to be Jewish. And but Corbyn was sort of blamed for not attacking this mural. He kind of defended it, and then he backed away from that. So that's one of the things that he was attacked for. It's very interesting that we've been hearing a lot about Donald Trump and his attacks on the four congresswomen recently elected, and telling them that they should go back to where they came from. Well, three of the four are actually born in this country. All of them are citizens. And but Trump had to kind of stick Israel into this battle. And just today or yesterday, there was a news story on Yahoo News saying that liberal U.S. Jews say Trump is weaponizing Israel to defend his racist tweets. And one of them, say he is weaponizing support for Israel, bringing in Israel on an issue that's totally not related to Israel. That's how you can tell he's weaponizing it. And you can't get away from the underlining racism of those tweets. I was from Aaron Kayak, a Democratic strategist who runs a group called Blue Light Strategies. So you have, getting back to Corbyn, this whole conflation of anti-Israel with, or criticism of Israel with criticism of Jews as a people is really kind of bogus. And if anybody wants to call in and dispute me, I would like to hear from you. The number to call is 503-231-8187. It's one very interesting thing is in Florida, there's a new law that applies to teachers. And it says that the new law brings up as an example of anti-Semitism, applying a double standard to Israel by requiring behavior of Israel that is not expected or demanded of any other democratic nation, or focusing peace or human rights investigations only on Israel. Well, I think that's kind of fair. If you just sort of pick on Israel and demand that Israel do things that no other nation does, I would see me that is very suspect. But we do have a caller. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi there, Pear.
Hmm?
Hi there.
Yes, how are you?
Okay, I'm okay. I've got a theological question that I like to pose,
mm-hmm.
and it's one which scholars, you know, go over, and it's not meant to be in any way anti-Semitic, but it's a biblical question that it goes, maybe when the children of Israel were wandering in the desert, and they came to the River Jordan, and God, after giving them the commandments, you know, the thou shalt not this and mainly the one I'm referring to is thou shalt not kill. And then God said, I'll give you all this land. You just have to kill everyone there and all the animals. And maybe God was hoping that the Israelites would say no, which, as if this was a test. And maybe God didn't give up on the Israelites because they couldn't bring themselves to kill everyone.
It's hard to get into theology because I think a lot of this is not real history. It's a kind of a myth or it's a story, you know.
Yes, but a lot of people believe it wholeheartedly.
That's true.
System. And that's the group of people that study the Bible or say they do. And that's one question that's tough to answer. I say it's... It was a test, and they failed. Israel failed, and they're failing in the same way today. And when it was,
well, I don't understand how they're failing.
If they're saying that God gave them this property, then and today, and they're saying, well, God said it was okay then, so maybe it's okay now. Yeah, they're failing in the same way, if that's the way to fully discuss the issue. And in that sense, for the people who really are making decisions about who to go out to war against and then saying God said it's okay, maybe God didn't want Israel to do that. Maybe he wanted them to say, no, we won't do that. It's a theological question. There's other parts of it that goes along with it. But
well, I don't claim to read God's mind, but...
But people do, and they're taking that scripture and they're basing all their actions upon as if this is what God wants from the scripture. And I dispute that translation of religions like to use as an excuse for warfare. It's a discussion, okay?
Okay, well, let's... You know, there's all kinds of theology at work. In fact, the Israel Shahak, a writer, he sort of delineated three kinds of anti-Semitism. The original one was the Christ killer myth, that the Jews are the ones who put Jesus to death, which is bogus. It was the Romans who put Jesus to death. But this myth has gone down for the centuries. It's still a lot of people believe it. And so there's also there are what they call Christian Zionists who have this belief that Jesus will not return unless all the Jews go back to Israel, and then they will be given the choice of whether they will convert to worshiping Jesus or whether they will remain Jewish and then be punished by God. So that's another theological belief which underlies a lot of the anti-Semitism. But these Christian Zionists, they are very much supportive of the state of Israel because it's part of its one step in their scheme of the second coming. And Israel, this is... strange politics going on here is that Israeli leaders, they realize that some of these Christian Zionists really don't like Jews very much at all, are happy to see them go to hell eventually, but they kind of play along with their political support for political reasons. It's like a very interesting wrinkle on this whole controversy, but I don't know. It's hard to get into theology. There's a lot of so-called history that just never happened. And so, but Israel Shahak, who is very much a dissident in Israel, he pointed out that, anti-Semitism began with this Christian Christ killer myth. And then it kind of, in the Middle Ages, it went into a kind of a... where a lot of Jews, and he grew up in Poland, so he used that as an example, that Polish landowners would often hire Jews as tax collectors, and because they were literate, they were able to do that job, and so these. They wound up being agents of the landlords, and when peasants revolted, they were the first ones handy to be revolted against. And then finally, you have in the 1800s, you have this kind of racial definition of anti-Semitism, which is all kinds of bogus science. Where you had scientists supposedly measuring people's skulls and everything else, trying to delineate differences between the so-called races and to justify, ill treatment of Jews and other people. So this is kind of the underpinning of a lot of anti-Semitism right now. But thank you for listening, and thank you for calling. And stay tuned, because I think we're going to have some live music coming up on the Heather McCoy Show.
It's 9:59. You're listening to KBOO Portland. Next up, we have at 10 o'clock, the Heather McCoy Show with the Portland band Body Shame.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is also available by calling the station at 503-231-8032. Board meetings will be conducted at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, Oregon, unless otherwise noted. The KBOO Board of Directors meets the fourth Monday of the month, starting at 6 p.m. Please call 503-231-8032 to verify if a meeting is being held.
KBOO Community Radio and the Jazz Society of Oregon are thrilled to present the 39th Annual Cathedral Park